I'm Stephanie. I'm 68 and basically live in Oklahoma City, although half my school career I did live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But basically, that's it for that. So what else was I supposed to?
How do you know Joel?
Oh, Joel, him, this guy. Where do I know him from? That's how I know Joel, okay? Before COVID, right?
Definitely before COVID.
Right. Okay. Anything else?
Joel, you can go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Joel Kahn. I am 75 years old. I'm in Edmond, Oklahoma. And I know Stephanie as a friend from Temple. Is there anything else I need to put in there? Since I don't have that up.
So I'll just go ahead for this recording. I'll go ahead and guide you all through the prompts. So the first one is going to be, why did you want to do this interview today? Stephanie, I don't know if you want to go ahead and answer first.
I can. The reason I wanted to is because for years of my life, probably starting around the age of 14, I did not like the world I was living in and wanted to make it better. So I picked professions to make it better. And then in the last 10 years, went actively back to my Judaism. And so my thing with this is if it can plant a seed, a positive seed, even if it doesn't grow immediately, at least plant it, then I'm all good. Okay. Joel?
Okay. The reason I did it was I heard some of the stories on NPR and I thought they were quite interesting. And I thought it'd be really interesting to meet somebody new and or get a little deeper into somebody that I used to know pre-COVID. So now I get a chance to do the latter. So all yours. Kevin, you want to leave?
Yeah, so in the chat, I've just put Joel's bio. Stephanie, if you could go ahead and read it out loud, that'd be great.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I was raised in Brooklyn, New York by my parents who were immigrants. Cool. They immigrated from different parts of Poland and met in the U.S. I went to Brooklyn Technical High School, a magnet school, and went to City College of New York. After graduation, I worked for the FFA, and this job eventually brought me to Oklahoma, where I taught EAA technicians. I have three wonderful children, two boys and a girl, seven and heavenly.
Mm-hmm. Seven heavenly grandchildren. They are wonderful.
Got it. They got it. Okay. Okay.
All right, Joel, I just put Stephanie's bio into the chat. I don't know if you want to go ahead and open it and read it from there.
Well, I've got it on the page that you sent me, the email. So I am an ex-special education teacher. My favorite age to teach was adolescents. Currently, I am a licensed clinical social worker. I was born and raised in Oklahoma. My dad was born and raised in Bronx, New York. Since I was 14 years old, my goal in life has been to help make the world a better place, which is reason I chose the professional path that I did. On my deathbed, I want to be able to look back on my life and know that I did everything I could to achieve that goal.
All right, so now you all have a chance to go ahead and ask each other questions based on what you've written in your bios. I don't know, Stephanie, if you want to go ahead and ask your questions first.
Okay. I'm looking. I'm totally not all here. Okay. Okay, most people, Joel, look at Oklahoma as still, I mean, there are still people in the world who think we still live in teepees, okay? So that kind of colors how people react or respond to me when I tell them I'm Jewish. Okay. So I'm wondering for you, since you were raised on the East Coast, how's it been for you to adjust to Oklahoma?
When I first got here, it was culture shock. It was totally amazed at what Oklahoma was like. I got out here, and the first time was 1970 was the first time I got here. And they used to say Oklahoma was 20 years behind the times, and people had crew cuts and cowboy clothes and looked at them going, whoa, it's kind of strange. But now I look at Oklahoma a little bit different. It's still 20 years behind the times, but I like the aughts. 2000, 2005, they were good years, a lot better than 2022. So I can live with it. How did you find Oklahoma?
Well, my dad wanted to go to medical school, but he wasn't the most energetic high school student. Let's say, okay. So okay. He ended up, came to Oklahoma to go to school. He went to OU and I went to OU. It's in our blood, that Sooner blood. But that's how he ended up in Oklahoma. He came out to go to med school, to college and med school. And he decided if he was going to have kids and get married, he wanted to raise them in this environment instead of East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got here. And you, sir?
Well, I was working. Let's say when I got out of college, I did not want to work in the defense industry. This was 1970, and so I had a job lined up to teach in my old high school physics. I ended up with a couple of licenses to teach, and at least that wasn't in the defense, because electrical engineer, you were making aircraft for war or dealing with something like that. But I went to three interviews just to get my mother off my back, because I had a definite Jewish mother. And she was chewing on me. And so I went to Long Island Lighting Company, Otis Elevator Company, and the Federal Aviation Administration. And I went to the FAA interview as a joke. It was definitely a joke. I got the worst clothes that didn't match, totally didn't match, a white shirt and a thin black tie, which was totally wrong for that clothes era. If you remember Dippity Doo, the glue that used to stick hair to your head, I had long hair and I took gobs of Dippity Doo and plastered my hair against my scalp. I did everything but put a slide rule on my belt. And I went to the interview. And after a half an hour interview with the guy, he goes, "You're the kind of guy we need at the FAA." And I went, "Oh, God." So I figured that was it. I was going to, there was no way. And they, the government works very strange. It takes months before they get the employment. And I was driving a cab in New York. And after 3 days of cab driving at night, I was going to do that for the summer before I taught. My back was killing me and my mother was up, because I was living with them at the time. And my mother said, "Joel, the FAA called. You want the job, call them tomorrow and you start on Monday." No more cab driving. That was it. I said, I'll do that for a while, and ended up, going to the FAA. I figured it was going to be a summer job and they didn't know about it. And I ended up, the first place they sent me was Cape Cod. It was in Falmouth, Massachusetts, which was the biggest party town you can ever imagine. And I'm a kid from Brooklyn who couldn't put two quarters together. I was poor. And here I am living on per diem, my full salary, party town. And then they said, halfway through the summer, "We got a course for you to go to Oklahoma." And it was going to run over the start of the school. And I said, "Oh, no, I can't go to that." He said, you got to go, or you're going to, that's the end of the job. And I said, well, how's a Jewish kid from Brooklyn ever going to see Oklahoma? So I quit the other job and stayed with the FAA, and here I am.
Okay. Next.
Well, I never knew that you worked with adolescent children.
Yes.
Where you said you worked with special ed.
Yes.
And God bless. I don't know how you can do it. That's really, my hat's off to you. How did that feel doing that?
Actually, I was going to do fifth or sixth grade, right? But God said, no, you're not. You're going to high school. You're going to be teaching high school. It was a God thing. Okay. So I ended up at McLeod. And it was a great experience. But it also opened, because one of the kids in the classroom one day, I'm blocking on the incident, but anyway, the kids to me were not labeled. They were labeled, but some of them didn't fit their label. And this one kid was on top of that, okay? Because, had an incident. And again, now I can't even remember what it was. But anyway, so then I knew I wasn't going to teach my whole career. That was never an entire career. So I taught for about 3 years, ended up going back and getting my master's, and then got my licensing according to Oklahoma law. And every job I have had, almost, let me say almost, every would be too general, but almost every job I have taken is working with so-called troubled adolescents. That whole time between getting my MSW and between the teaching degree. And then I decided I wanted to do therapy. Of course, I decided this one all when I was 14, just because I didn't like the real world. I wanted to make the real world a better place. And I figured that I may never see some of the seeds I've planted, but I have planted seeds. I know that. And on days when I'm like, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? Nying and yang, whining and griping and, went all the way to Norman one day, just whining and griping about picking the career I picked. So I go into this store to get the kids their candy bars, because if they did well in group, they got a candy bar. They could write their name down, they got a candy bar. Not a giant one, but they got a candy bar. And this kid at the counter that I'd never seen before looks at me and says, wow, are you hungry? I said, no, these are for the guys that I work with down the street. And this young man looked at me. He said, yeah, I was in a place like that one time. And if it hadn't been for two people who cared about me, I'd be in jail right now. Okay. Wow. So I walked out of the car and I'm like, okay, God, I get the message. I'll quit whining. So little things like that, which are huge things, kind of kept me in the profession for a while. And like I said, if I could just plant one seed, I'm good.
I'm sure you have.
I hope so. The beauty of some of it, I do believe I just get very frustrated sometimes with how adults treat kids, because they're human beings too. Kids are human. And if you treat them with any level of respect, they're going to return it. So I was working at, and then I'll shut up with my stories because I keep us here all day with these. But I was at the detention center, and it was one of the pods that I worked on, did group with the boys. And I promise you, if a new kid came in that group and even acted like they were going to give me a hard time, the rest of the guys said, oh, no, you leave Miss Stephanie alone. She's the only one that treats us like a human being in this place. Okay, so every now and then I'll get these things dropped on me. I'm like, okay, I'll shut up, God, and go use the gifts you gave me and quit whining. Anyway, I'm sorry. So.
Alrighty, I'll go ahead and give y'all the next prompt if y'all don't have any more questions for each other.
don't think so. Don't
We're
think
good?
so.
All right, cool. So the next question is, who has been the most influential person in your life and what did they teach you?
Joel?
Uh-oh. There's really too many to pick one.
Right.
You know, you think about your parents first, where, you know, and how they influence your life. My mother was the stereotypical Jewish mother. She was 4'11 and a half at the tallest. You know, little bit. But you know, next to the word tough in the dictionary is a picture of my mother. She is definitely. I'm not going to give her too much lip. She had a real hard life. The story that she had from her youth. Her father basically abandoned her in Poland, and he went to America. But this is another story for another day. My father was a very quiet man, but he used to tell me all the times that, you know, when I started, you know, acting up, he said, "What do you think? The world owes you a living? Get out there and work." You know, so he was kind of like, you know, stop playing the games and do things straight. And then there was one guy, when I was about 25, he actually was kind of a unique individual, and it kind of acted like my mentor. And a lot of wild stories about Ed and his wife, Mary, and they were, he was a hypnotist. He taught me how to do hypnosis back then, and which really works well for people. There's little tricks he can use to calm people down. Anyway, the story goes on that Ed taught me a lot of different things. He did a little, I guess you would call it a little therapy with me, if you want to call it that. And I learned quite a bit from his perspective. Learned a little bit about love from him, you know, in terms of what it feels like. Because one time we were talking, and it was really kind of strange. He said, you know, because I felt so much gratitude, and I felt a little tickle in my chest. And he goes, "Did you feel that?" And I go, "What? You felt that?" He said, "Yep." He said, "That's love. That little tickle that you felt there, that's love." And it was kind of one of those things, they go, "Whoa, that's something I never realized." And the fact that you can feel other people's emotions in that way. Yeah. So I'll leave it to you.
Okay, next.
Stephanie, who's one of your biggest influences?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I'm about half here. Thank you. Actually, I would have to say it was my father as well, and my little Jewish grandmother, who sounds exactly like your mom, 4'11"-ish kind of thing, yeah. But my dad, I trusted my dad completely, because if my dad said, "This is going to happen if you do X," and I did X, then it happened. Mm-hmm. And it happened exactly as he said it would. So what I learned from him, even when it was in a negative situation, he'd already warned me, if you do this behavior, X is going to happen. And it taught me to be consistent. It taught me to I think parents all the time, go clean your room, right? Okay, we could have 15 kids in this room and have 15 different definitions of what clean your room means, right? So part of what he taught too, and the employees that I supervised for a while at a children's home, I treated them the same way I treated the kids I taught. Consistency. Here's the rules. Here's what happens if you break them, that kind of thing. And about halfway through my career at St. Joseph's, I hired, as an assistant, was allowed to hire this young man. And so I hired him, and being a dumb 26-year-old, not to insult you, Kevin, you're a lot smarter than this guy was. And seriously. Anyway, so we dated for a little while and I decided, no, we're done. But I, even at that age, could separate personal from professional. Apparently he could not. So he kept trying to ruin my reputation with my employees, and it backfired because I wasn't going to play. So I'd have two or three employees a day come to me and say, okay, Miss Stephanie, this is what he said this time. And all I would say to them is, thank you, I appreciate the information. So that set up the situation where he was spending more time, he upped the ante, and I'm still not buying in the game. I could fire him because he broke enough rules. So I learned that kind of consistency from my dad. And my dad was a music lover. I also got that from my dad. And that has influenced me. I love all kinds of music. And that came from my dad as well. So I think being consistent, say what you mean and mean what you say, is very valuable. And any time in my career, if a kid looks at me and says, well, blah, 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 it's like, no, we're talking about your behavior, not mine. We're not talking about so-and-so. We're talking about you. I would have employees do that, come to the office and be complaining about another employee. And my answer to them was always, you're in my room right now. We're talking about what you did. If there's an issue with so-and-so, I'll deal with that later. Okay. So have I talked too much?
Definitely not.
But anyway, that's kind of my background. And I re-enter Judaism and then I'll shut up, because of my grandparents. And both of my grandparents, my dad's parents, had six or seven brothers and sisters. And once they lived in Kishinev, which I think is now Poland, part of Poland. I think it is. Wow. It's still there, but anyway. So they came over and I was kind of religious background, really nothing, except that my grandparents were Jewish. And both of them came over. My grandmother had a sister that came with them, as well as her husband. And then my grandfather had a brother and her husband that came with him. The rest of their family was completely killed in the Holocaust. So as I grew older, I felt like there was something missing in my life. And that's what it was. That the Judaism, the part of me that is Jewish, which is all of me. But anyway, so I kind of fell back in it. And a lot of it is out of respect for my grandparents. So anyway, that, and my dad, I'm supposed to go back to my dad, right? Consistency. That's what I learned. And a love of music. I'm done. Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. The last question from me, or at least from like the normal One Small Step recordings, is, could you briefly describe in your own words, your personal political values?
Really?
Who would you like to go first?
Yeah,
whoever wants to take it first. Whoever wants to go. How about Joel? How about we hear from you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not from me, right?
political values. I am in Oklahoma. I'm a fish out of water. I am definitely liberal. I guess I brought along my 1960s. You know, New York Jewish liberal attitude. Of course, my kids grew up here in Oklahoma, which makes two out of three of them conservative. And I've learned not to speak about it in family gatherings. However, that's awfully hard for me not to bite through my tongue. Yes. And my neighbors all think I'm crazy. You know, they think, I just want to give everything away to other people. And so, well, I got to tell you, It felt so wonderful to go. The first time I went to temple at one of the, I think it was a rabbi Thursday luncheons with, lunch and learn that she had. And we're waiting for her one day, and this is a few weeks after I started, and we had tables pushed together so that we all sat around one big table, basically. And we're talking politics, and all of a sudden I was in the middle of a group of Jewish liberals. And I felt like finally I was home.
Oh, that's funny.
That's it.
Okay.
No, I'll leave it to you.
Huh?
I'll leave it to you to tell your story.
Okay. I think what I realized once I started getting back into my Judaism, and this is going to touch on political here in a minute, is that I was a Jew waiting to happen. Because so much of what I have read in the Torah, through the Torah, are things that Jews work on that I have been worried about since 14. Okay. So even though I'm registered one thing, none of it fits me. I'm middle of the road. Let's not go too far left or too far right, because things lose their meaning when you do that. Okay, I believe. So I'm kind of middle of the road politically and going to vote anyway, depending on the candidate, not my race or party. Is that it? Did I answer that?
Yeah. So, if y'all are done sharing with that, we can go ahead and move on to the temple's questions. I don't know if you all have copies of it, or if you want me to go ahead and read.
There's one thing I want to add. One of the things that I've had ex-wives who were Christian, and there's a big difference in philosophy in that in Judaism. This is one thing that really struck me, is that God gave you the world, but it wasn't perfect. He left some things for you to fix, so go fix them. Where in Christianity, I guess I hear the revelations, the idea that the world's going to end and Jesus is going to come back. And so don't worry about it. Those who are good are going to be saved, and those who aren't are going to die. So there's a difference in the story that you're told. It's kind of like, there's things for you to do. Go do them.
Joel, it's yes. Like one of our favorite prayers. Pray as if everything depends on God. Act as if everything depends on us.
Yeah.
So it goes right along with what you're saying. Doesn't do any good to have those Jewish values in an extra bedroom with a lot of books, right? If you don't bring it out of that room into the real world, it doesn't matter, right? So,
that's
okay,
right.
Shut up. Okay.
Good way of putting it. So, Kevin, did you want to go those other ones?
Sure. So the first one is, why are you affiliated with Temple B'nai or B'nai Israel? Sorry, I don't know if I mispronounced it.
Yeah, you're fine. I guess I'll go first. I ended up looking to get back to my roots. I was in the process of divorce, and at the separation, it was kind of like, okay, what do I do now? Where do I go? And so I said, let me go start searching. So I started going back to the temple. I met some people there and just kind of felt good. It felt right. And it was nice to have a group of people that I belonged with, instead of, going into a group of people where I had to bite my tongue about politics or anything else, trying to fit in. So it was important to me to have a place. And as for B'nai Israel, I didn't really belong in a conservative temple. I don't really know Hebrew. And so I'd like to be able to understand more about the services, and in Reform it's more English, and we're conservatives more Hebrew. And it just felt good to be there. So I'll leave it at that and let you talk.
Me?
Stephanie, yeah, why are you affiliated with the temple?
Because it is the Reform temple is why. I just, again, if you get too far to either direction, it's harmful. So my belief is we got to get this stuff in the middle, okay? And I think the Orthodox, from what I have read, is not living a Jewish life, really. And that just may be me. But otherwise, there would be no real issues in Israel. I would like everybody to see that middle ground and be able to work with one another. So anyway, that's, and what brought me, as I said, there was something missing in my life, and it, I boiled it down to that. So join Temple, and Temple Israel is the Reform. And I think I went to Reform Judaism Temple growing up in Tulsa maybe once, but I did spend the summers with my grandmother. So that influenced me a great deal also. So anyway, does that answer it?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. So I'll go ahead and read one of the other questions. What do you believe is the role of religious teaching? Oh, sorry, I skipped one. Where do you stand on some of the more controversial social issues in Oklahoma today? For instance, abortion access, adolescent gender identity care, school vouchers, or other issues that seem to polarize our society. Also, if at any point, you know, you want me to move on to another question, feel free to let me know. But yeah, that's the second one on the list.
Oh, the I guess I'll go first. I guess the thing, the first part of this question is kind of interesting. When you believe in the role of religious teachings or values in political policy, I think the idea of separation of church and state is very important. And in Oklahoma,
yes,
unfortunately, there is way too much connection of church and state. And that comes down to the other questions, you know, in there, where you talk about abortion access, where you have a lot of church people saying that's wrong. And I don't think there's anybody who's, you know, eagerly says, seeks out an abortion. You know, it's like one of those things that you got to do when you got to do it. And I think that to put a religious bent on it, I think is incorrect. Adolescent gender identity care, I can see where that could be a hard one, because very much adolescents, their brains aren't fully developed. And so you have to weigh, that, you know, do they even know what their identity is as a sexual being, as an adolescent or pre-adolescent? Some of them are making decisions to be part of a group rather than a internal identity issue. So I don't know much about that. Luckily, I haven't had to deal with that directly. School vouchers, I think, are totally wrong. I think they're destroying public schools. Rich people don't go to public schools. They go to private schools. So to be able to transfer money from the public school with a voucher to a private school, I think, is totally wrong and defeats public education. So those are some of my personal views. I'll leave that to you, Stephanie. I can see some of you might agree and some you might not.
I absolutely agree with everything you said. No, I do, for real. And I take issue with, because I've dealt with all kinds of adolescents, okay? And I take issue, I've run across couple of three of them whose parents have totally disowned them. They may have kept them until they were 18, but because of their gender identity, they'd kick them out of the house, or they, you know, wouldn't help take care of them. And I personally believe that that's not a thing you wake up one morning and go, oh, I think I like boys today, being a boy. Or you wake up, oh, I'm a girl, I'll go find a girlfriend. You know what I'm saying? That is, to me, within. So that's my stance on that.
It's a very hard, you know, and I don't think any, they're not all cookie cutter made. Right. You know, everybody's right. Different. And exactly. Some do it for one reason, some do it for a different.
Exactly.
I am lucky I don't have to deal with it.
Yes.
And it's one I can bury my head in the sand and leave it for somebody who is much smarter than I.
Cool. So another question on the list is, have you had a God moment where you felt God's presence in your life?
Oh, wow. I'll go first on that one.
Go for it.
We took a trip this past summer with the temple. Rabbi set up a trip to Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And I've had all kinds of what another friend and I call God moments. But this one was so overwhelming, it brought tears to my eyes. I went to what is used to be called the Wailing Wall. They now call it the Western Wall. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, I got close to it and touched it. I felt like I was totally flooded with God and all that's good. It was just it shook me. The intense emotion shook me a little bit, but that was at the Wailing Wall. And that would be, God was there. Okay. So anyway, it felt that way. So That would be mine. That was, yeah, I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Well, I can think of one when my firstborn, my daughter, when she was born and the doctor handed me her, I started crying from joy. Mm-hmm. And it was the most amazing feeling I ever had. And I think that it was the first time I ever cried from joy. And as I'm going, wait a second, tears are running down my face and I'm happy. It doesn't make any sense. So I'd say that's my God moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for sharing. The next question is, what does being Jewish or a part of the Jewish community bring to your life?
Well, let me go.
Go ahead. I would love you to go first.
Okay, repeat the question, make sure I'm getting this right.
The question is, what does being Jewish or a part of the Jewish community bring to your life?
Well, for me, it reinforces, everything that I believe in, almost everything, fits Judaism. Every time I picked up a Torah portion, I read Torah portions, the weekly one, every week for I don't know how long. It was like I was a Jew waiting to happen. The values, the everything. And it keeps popping up like that too. So I think that the morals and values that are espoused by Judaism are me. They're just me.
So, could you share which specific values come to mind when you say that?
We could try the Ten Commandments. Basically, gossiping, being rude, hitting, you name it, all of it. Lots of different things. Or criticizing someone else because they don't believe like you do. So that that may be the most important one. It ends up being called gossip, okay? And I try to avoid it. I do my best. I catch myself. And that's one thing before I die, I got to stop. got to stop. It's talking about people behind their backs, you know? And that's not right. If I have an issue with you, I need to come to you, right? Not go to 14 other people who have nothing to do with anything, right? So does that help? Kevin, does that answer that? Sort of?
Yeah, thank you. How about you, Joel?
You know the story about the king who is wearing no clothes and was convinced by his tailor that they were the best clothes in the world, and he's actually naked, you know, walking around naked. But everybody in the whole country, you know, when he sees the kid, oh, that's beautiful. Finally, one little kid says, the king has no clothes on. Well, that's how I feel sometimes in America. Sometimes that's how I feel in Oklahoma. I listen to these people and they're talking and I go, oh my God, the king has no clothes on. There's no logic there. It's nuts. And so the thing about being in a Jewish community and what happens is, it's funny, I see a lot of people who have the same belief structure that I do, and we're able to see that the king has no clothes. And it makes me feel like I'm not the one totally crazy. I might be partially crazy, but I'm not totally crazy when I see it. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for sharing that. I did want to say we have about 8 minutes left, and we have a few more questions, just so that y'all are aware of the time. Number six is, I think you kind of addressed this a bit just now, Joel, but number six is, what do you tell people it is like to be Jewish or part of the Jewish community in Oklahoma City?
Ooh. That is more of a rougher question than it, I think the rabbi or whoever made up the list came up with, because it's one of those things that in Oklahoma, unfortunately, if you're Jewish, you're ostracized. And so the question is, do you try to pass or not? Or whether, you know, and do they have no understanding of the Jewish religion, you know, one person said that when they were younger, their friends were looking for the horns growing out of their head, you know, and seeing whether there was a horn there or not. So there's very little understanding of Judaism at all from the average person. So, you know, unfortunately, with this face, I cannot hide my Jewish real well. But, you know, it's not something that I really try. When somebody says, do you mind if I pray, you know, over this? Sure, no problem. And I'll, you know, bow my head and say a prayer. But it's not something that I'm going to go advertising or trying to convert somebody or anything like that, or try to convince somebody about their belief structure, whatever they want to believe.
I haven't really encountered a lot of negativity about being Jewish, even in the state of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have one friend, cracks me up. She says, I'm her favorite Jewish person. And then she says, oh, but you're the only Jew I know. So I take it in stride like that. And I don't think that person meant that cruelly. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I personally, my personal model is I have the freedom to do what I want, think what I want, act the way I want to, say what I want, as long as it doesn't interfere with your right to do the same thing. Okay. And that's how I look at that. So I can be me, and I'm going to let you be you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that answer the?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So we have about 5 minutes left. So I think this is going to go be the last question that I'll ask. And I think it's a fun one. What is your favorite Jewish holiday and why?
Well, from my youth, it has to be Hanukkah. It's got to be Hanukkah. Come on, we get presents, you know, get toys. It's one time we tell all the Jewish friends, hey, or our non-Jewish friends, hey, we get 8 days, 8 gifts. Yeah, come on, we got you beat.
Joel, I know you're still talking, but I got to fit this in. In my house growing up, my stepmother was Christian. We got a Christmas tree every year, and she called it a Hanukkah bush. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, it's not anything, as we don't do it. But growing up, it was a Hanukkah bush.
Yep. I remember back in the 50s, that statement coming out and going, it's kind of like, oh my God. But it's true. And there are more Jewish families that do that than you can take a stick at, because Christmas takes over America.
Right.
And really, it from Labor Day on, there's Christmas trees in Sam's and Costco. So you just go with the flow.
Yep.
But Hanukkah was it when I was a kid.
Hmm.
That's it. And I guess, is that the last? What's your favorite? Is it Hanukkah also?
You guys are going to think I'm totally crazy, which I am. I resemble that remark. No, I think Yom Kippur might be my favorite one.
Interesting.
Just because, except this year we couldn't, but it's a time to reflect for me, truly reflect, which I try to do every day. But it's a chance to start over. It's a chance to get rid of a bad habit. It's a chance to study more about what makes me Jewish and what doesn't, kind of thing. So I don't know. I think it might be. I know that sounds crazy, but
no.
It's just kind of, and that's the one day where we're in temple, except we weren't this year, all day, right? You get mm-hmm. up. So anyway, I would say that. Just because.
I understand.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both for sharing. We have about 2 minutes left, so I don't know if y'all want to go ahead and start wrapping up.
Sure.
Sure.
Sure. What are we wrapping up on?
So you can just say, well, you know, this was a great conversation. Thank you. Ah. Or we could just, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, I'll say, Stephanie, I've been missing you.
We've missed you.
I miss you. It's, you know, things got kind of sidetracked with COVID and everything else. And you and Richard, you know, haven't had a chance to see either one of you for so long. So other than crossing paths at the grocery store.
Yes. Yeah. And well, actually, just because I saw a friendly, smiling face, it made me very comfortable. I was freaking out about doing this, especially since I feel vulnerable. But then when it was used, my partner, I'm like, oh, this will be great. I can learn more about Jill as well as myself. So
that's we got a chance finally. Yep. And I miss you. I miss you a whole bunch. And just to hear, you know, the conversation you know, stuff that we used to talk about in terms of what you're doing in therapy and how you see your structure of your life and all. I really miss that. So I didn't expect to see you.
I know.
I did not expect I expected it was a different member of the congregation. Totally. Totally. And so I was telling Sandy, oh, there's no doubt who it is, because I knew that she worked with, you know, kids in need. So it was when I saw you go, oh, wonderful, great.
That's kind of what I did, I swear. Same reaction. Yay.
By the way, I hope you're feeling better. I hope I'll see you again.
Lizzie,
your dog's agreeing with me.
Huh?
Your dog is agreeing.
Oh, okay. Oh, goodness. Okay.
Alrighty. I'll go ahead and end the recording now. Stay on the line, though, so I can talk about the release form and all that.
Okay.
Okay.